But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, broadcasting to all you foodies out there across the fruited plain, as they say. And I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Happy Easter.
That's right. Today's Easter. Happy Easter to all. You know, it's a holiday season. And Passover and Easter coincide almost like the same time this year, right?
Yes, yes.
Friday night was...
Passover began at sunset on Friday.
Yeah.
That was the first Seder. Mm-hmm. Second Seder was Saturday, yesterday.
Right.
And today we look forward to our Easter dinner.
Now, is the second Seder, is it leftovers from the first Seder, or is it a whole new operation?
It's a whole new operation. I think a lot of families end up having multiple destinations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But this year, being that the second Seder is on a Saturday, that's like, in quotes, the holy day, because it's just so much more convenient.
Yeah.
Most people work on Passover.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, to get to family or whatever, midday, because it's usually an early meal, mm-hmm. you know, 5 o'clock type
okay.
of thing. But in today's world, there's not a lot of businesses actually that facilitate people taking off for religious purposes.
Yeah,
just the way of the world.
We're becoming a secular country, you know.
Well, in the Jewish family way, our big holidays are in September usually.
Yeah.
You have Rosh Hashanah, which is 2 days, and then you have Yom Kippur. I'm finding a lot of people are not taking off anymore for Rosh Hashanah, and they'll just take off for Yom Kippur. Now, as a kid growing up on Long Island, I actually took off from school, and I went to services at the temple, and
yeah,
there was
yeah.
a really intense 2-day celebration. But again, everything changes. So this year, with Passover being the second night on a Saturday, everybody was just so excited about who was going to have
host
that coveted calendar day.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's I do a pseudo Seder every year, and this year was no different. But I count a couple of things that I normally don't do, and I don't know if it certainly wasn't intended that way. But I think some people interpreted it like as almost like a wise ass thing. But I did a menu that's a separate menu, a Seder menu, it's boxed off on the regular menu, you know, and you can have it as a three-courser, or you can just order a la carte. And so, you know, I'm trying to stay within the laws. My the manager at the club says, you know, you got to get gevulte fish. I'm like, there's nobody under 80 that eats gevulte fish. You know what I mean? So anyway, I said I could make, you know, because one year I made quenelles instead. It was kind of the same thing, but it's not as horrific, you know, a flavor. And so I bought some gevulte fish, you know, it's easier, you know. And so we have that. I have to make chopped liver, which is probably the only food substance on the planet that I can't swallow. I just can't get it down. I don't know what it is about chicken livers. And I can eat foie gras all day long. Chicken liver, beef liver, can't do it, right? So when I make it, and I'm pretty good at making it, but I always have to have somebody else check the salt content because I'll gag if I taste the chicken liver. And so we have that and, you know, in a salad or whatever.
So wait, I have to interject. And again, a little behind the scenes, although we're airing this on Easter morning, the show was actually recorded on Thursday.
Right.
So here I am sitting face to face with you. I need to go to Zorn's this afternoon to pick up my fresh killed turkey for my mom to prepare for Saturday.
Right.
But she's also going to be making her chopped liver.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you can help me, and then I don't have to call her. But do I want rendered chicken fat or unrendered chicken fat
rendered.
To make the chopped liver?
You want rendered.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Schmaltz. You got to have schmaltz, you know. So, yeah, and so the entrees, I decided to, you know, I have this dish that I did at Jewel for a long time, and it was a braised short rib, but I braised it with root beer. Because I like the sweetness that it gave. And it didn't taste like a root beer sauce, but it just had that sassafras-y kind of
flavor. We've been doing that with marinating chicken breast.
Have you?
And putting it on the grill during
the
summer.
Oh, it's great. So I decided to do it in honor of Passover. I decided to do, instead of root beer, Dr. Brown's Black Cherry soda, which gives it a nice little sweetness to the sauce, you know, but not, you know, cloying or anything like that. It's not like you think of a sweet sauce you would serve with a duck undertone, you know. And so my friend Eddie, who's Jewish, said to me, "What are you being a wise ass with the Dr. Brown?" I said, "No, I'm trying to be."
For those of you that are not familiar with Dr. Brown's soda, it's sort of a kitschy Jewish brand. Yeah, totally. But growing up in a Jewish environment and Jewish soul food, when you went to the kosher deli where you would go for your corned beef or your pastrami and brisket and bologna and salami and tongue, your sandwich you had with either Dr. Brown's cream. Black cherry,
right.
Or celery tonic.
Yeah,
celery. I still don't understand what celery tonic was. And because I was always needed to be svelte, I would get the diet version, which they've discontinued.
I think they taste better. I drink the diet black cherry when I go to Ben's. You know, I get that Jewish soul food wiggy about once a month where I go wandering into Ben's and... It's a trip that I make. I do the bookstore and then Ben's right next door in Carl Place, right?
Well, at least somebody still reads. But that's another stop on my list today. I'm going to Ben's because I'm going to check out their turkey gravy.
Uh-huh.
Mom asked for that.
Okay.
And I'm going to get some of their pineapple cranberry compote.
Nice.
And I think that's all from there. Then I got to go get some pickles and peppers and sauerkraut. Again, I think I'm going to get that at Zorn. So I got
deli hopping.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
today. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun, though. It's fun to gather all that stuff together and have a meal like that, you know.
But let's talk about Easter a little bit. The family's going to be coming over today for many.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this in previous weeks. You know, some people are doing like the pork loin.
Sure.
Other people are doing the traditional pink ham, either spiral cut or honey baked.
Honey baked, yeah. Pineapples and cherries on
top. And I think both sides of the scorecard will be doing the sweet potato marshmallow. What is that?
It's a disaster is what it is. I have an order for that today. I have somebody wants to take out like 2 pounds of sweet potato with mini marshmallows. What do you think? I don't have mini marshmallows in a restaurant. It's hilarious, you know?
So my mom was reading me the recipe because this is actually a quick, funny story. My sister may or may not be with us for the holiday. So she was sure to make sure that my mother had the recipe. But my mother was the one that gave her the recipe. So my mother, first of all, kept looking around the kitchen for the cookbook.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
couldn't find it.
Oh, boy.
Turns out because she lent it to my sister, and she never returned it. But the recipe was very interesting because my mom pointed out, it says, you know, you got to melt the marshmallows so that they're melted but not burnt.
Well, yeah.
So it was a good thing they pointed that out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I kind of like the burnt sugar thing on the top. You know, it's like when you roast a marshmallow.
When you roast the marshmallow.
Well done. You don't want it rare. You know what I mean? It's the whole point.
Well, there's a happy medium there. You want it that brown, beautiful color, not the charcoal.
Yeah, dark black. You don't want dark black. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's people have been putting marshmallows on sweet potatoes forever. I don't know where it started.
We all know your favorite alternative to that.
What's that?
Which is the string bean and cream mushroom souffle.
Yeah. But, you know, I put roasted bananas in my sweet potato. I take, you know, bananas, sometimes you have them, they're on a turn, ready to go. You just put them in the oven and you roast them, I don't know, 15 minutes or so until they're real soft. And just let them cool and take it out. And then I take that and I make a puree out of that. And I puree that banana into the sweet potatoes. And it gives it a really nice, you know, kind of dynamic that, you know, I use a little brown sugar and a little maple syrup also. But the bananas really kind of make the sweet potatoes pop. So you kind of get that, you know, that sugary, fruity thing, which is, you know, an added, again, I use the term dynamic to the dish rather than just the sugar of the marshmallow. You know, marshmallows really don't have any flavor other than sweet. But the bananas have that whole banana flavor, so it's that undertone.
So it's pureed into it.
Pureed into it, yeah.
Interesting. Maybe I can, again, it's Thursday. Mom didn't make it yet. I might.
You may be able to sneak them in there, you know. Well, you don't put them in until you're ready to whip them. You know, so, you know, like I steam the, you know, the sweet potatoes off, and then I whip them with butter and a little bit of brown sugar.
But it's important to brown the bananas first, you say?
No, it's not. You don't. Yeah, well, you're roasting them. In the skin, you know. And then just when they cool, you peel that off and then puree them. Sometimes I leave little chunks in it.
So what does that do rather than just putting it in raw?
Well,
it caramelizes the sugars? Or?
It makes it easier to puree, you know. So, you know, the bananas are firmer, you know, when they're raw. So you can do that. You can chunk them in there if you want. But I don't know. I find the puree, it's a little sweeter. So it has a little more, I think, punch to it, you know. But it's a great recipe. I've been using it. It's great with pork. It's great with turkey. Fish, you know, some people use sweet potatoes with fish. I don't tend to do that. I think it's a little odd, you know.
Oh, my God, a special news alert.
What happened?
Saturday night, I had the opportunity to go to Luigi Q.
Did you go? Yeah.
I did.
I love Luigi.
I get a call from Carrie. Her daughter, Marcy, was competing in a weightlifting competition.
Yikes.
And it was over like 7:30 or so, and she was in Hicksville. So she goes, where should we go? Can we get together? So I said, give me a minute. I was trying to figure out, and at first came to mind was Patricia's. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. They're in Hopog, Hicksville, and Massapequa.
I know of them.
It's family-style Italian food. Very nice. I enjoy it. She goes, a little too noisy. So I said, Luigi Q.
Yeah.
So I call up to find out if they could accommodate us. We went there about 8:30, it turned out. Still a nice crowd Saturday night. Luigi had left, so I didn't get to see him. But I made sure that I would because I left my credit card and had to go back on Monday. So at any rate.
Very generous of you, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. So it I guess they had remodeled at one point.
Yeah, well, they burnt down.
Oh, okay, because I had been there a few years ago.
Yeah.
Hadn't been back since, but it was great. They have a really cool thing for the ladies. They have a little bench for their pocketbooks, which is cute. But we had a great meal, and I guess some of it is intuitive because of talking to you and just absorbing. We had an interesting octopus with beets salad as our appetizer.
Uh-huh.
They were trying to hold out on us, though. They said there was no beets.
Really?
So we asked for some tomatoes just to...
Yeah, yeah, round it out.
And they brought out some beets.
Really?
So it was really nice. But it was actually really, really nice. Just well done. I forget what the... I guess it must have been in olive oil or something. But just very, very nice. And then they had a special that was intriguing. It was a lamb and pork combo. So it was... lamb chops,
right,
and loin of pork, and I think it was in a red wine reduction, and I forget what the other sauce was, but unbelievably wonderful, just a great meal, and it just spur of the moment.
Yeah, those are fun.
Avant-garde.
Spontaneity. It's great.
But it was really really nice. And then again the next day I called up and I tried to see if my card was there, and Luigi picks up, and I go, I'm a friend of Tom Shodell. Oh, Tom, he's a nicer guy.
Yeah, Luigi and I go back a ways. He's a good chef, Luigi. He hasn't cooked so much anymore, but he's taught all his kids in the kitchen what to do, and they do a great job. I think it's one of the best Italian restaurants in Nassau County, you know.
I had to break in to get my credit card, though.
They did, yeah.
I pull up, and the front door's locked. But there was a car there or whatever, so I went through the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then their maitre d', he's got his own lazy boy chair in there. Because I was there around 3 o'clock. He's stretched out on this chair.
Well, he's 127 years old, too. You know? Yeah, no, it's a great place. I mean, I have a lot of fun there. I know everybody there, you know, so they treat me like royalty when I go in. But it's cooking the way he would cook in Italy, which is really what I look for in an Italian restaurant. I mean, if I never had another chicken parmesan in my life, it'd
be okay. To me, it was just perfect. I get to eat out a lot, and so many times I don't get upset, but it just doesn't meet the mark of what I was looking for. And this, it couldn't have been any better.
Yeah, I think that's the reason I've... almost limited myself to where I go out to eat these days is because I find that there's so many places that are just the same. You know, they're all the same. They all have the same menus. They all have the same stuff, and it's, you know, it's so done. It's like there's a little place I go to called Leone in East Norwich. And it's a pizza place primarily, but they have really good food. I mean, really, it's surprisingly good food. You know, for
that's
for,
on 106, 107. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For that type of operation, you usually get, you know, kind of, I don't want to say mediocre, but, you know, it's not stellar. It doesn't, you know, really grab your attention. It's more functional. I got to go get something to eat, you know. This is really, I'm telling you, everything I've had there has been like, oh, my God. You know, good for you. You know, who's in the kitchen? You know, I like to meet this guy. You know?
Well, again, there's just like you say, there's so many red sauce Italian restaurants.
Yeah.
Monday night, I had an occasion to be in Garden City, and afterwards, we wanted to grab something to eat, and we went to Bocce.
Yeah.
Which place was mobbed Monday night? Mobbed. And my goodness,
dinner for $20. You know.
Yes, it's a $20 dinner, but my goodness, they had. Like, I was told that lasagna is a go-to dish there. But it was on a big oval plate at $20, but yeah. It was, you know, a meal, for, really a meal for two.
Well, it's the size of a small Balkan country, is most of those things are. You know, it's a lot of, it, look, there are places that service that end of the clientele that just wants to go out and have a, you know, a decent meal, fill themselves up. I have spaghetti left over for sandwiches the next day.
But I have to make a comment. what I found to be very interesting, I believe the management and most of the clientele was Hispanic.
Yeah, oh, yes. Well, that's the way of the world. That's America now.
But I just, you know, again, when you, it just was interesting to me because it was concentrated in that demographic, which is nothing wrong with it. I guess that area. Happens to be high Hispanic, but you know, it just
they're the only ones willing to work. It's like, you know, I hate to say it,
but even the patrons also. But the place was mobbed, and again, yeah. We were there probably about 6:30.
Right.
And again, the food was fantastic, and it's definitely someplace I would go back to. And the staff was incredible. Again, they were just engaging and. You know, I mean, you don't have to be all that knowledgeable at a restaurant of that type, mm-hmm. but it was the cordiality and just very nice ambiance, and you felt like you were, you know, that cheers, that phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, well, Norm, you know, everybody's wants to be, everyone, want everybody to know your name or whatever that tagline is. So Thursday was my birthday, right? And trying to decide where to go to dinner. So I've got to, you know, since I'm not paying, I'm going to really go to town here, you know, because I get a freebie today, last Thursday. But so it was a choice between Trattoria in Smithtown and Osteria Umberto, Osteria Umbra in Smithtown also. So going back and forth, because I go to both places fairly frequently. I don't feel like driving to the city. You know, I don't mind. The city's fun, you know, on the way in and while you're there. On the way out is a nightmare, you know, because, you know, then you got to go home and you're full and you whatever. You don't want to drive. So anyway, so I went to Osteria Umbra, and I can't say enough about this place. I mean, he's so good. Marco Pellegrini is the chef there, and he's from Umbria, which I thought he misspelled the name on the sign because it's Osteria Umbra, but it turns out that... he is from Umbria, and he cooks like he's still there. And he has this big, I had suckling pig, they have this big rotisserie in the middle of the dining room, you know. It's probably 12, 15 feet long with open flames and stuff. It's just a fabulous restaurant. You have to get there. And apparently you go out more than I do now because, you know, I hear you're in Garden City, you're over here, you got, you know, you're like a social butterfly these days.
Seems to be. Well, I'm sorry I missed your birthday.
No, it's fine. I don't really herald it anymore because I've had enough of them already. You know what I mean? It's not like it's my first one. So, I'm getting there. You know, I'm staring 70 in the puss. It's getting a little scary now. You know.
Well, how old are you?
I'm 69.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I have the body of a 67-year-old. You know, and I don't feel a day over 68. You know, I think birthdays kind of, it's almost a day to reflect, you know. It's like, you know, I had a lot of people betting I wouldn't make it. So, you know, it's, I'm playing with house money now, you know, so we'll see. But if I do make it to 70 next year, I'll be the only one on my father's side of the family that's made it to 70, which is, so I'm either going in the next year or so, or I'll...
Well, the one thing I know is you're looking at life through clear vision, because I know you just got a whole array of prescription glasses.
I got to tell you what's going on with this. Did I tell you this whole story about the...
You said you were trying to get adjusted to these...
progressive glasses, right? So...
For the progressive chef.
Yeah, that's me. That's, I'm real progressive. My daughter is always yelling at me to do health stuff, right? So the latest one is I've been wearing drugstore glasses my whole life, right? I started out at 50, and now I'm up to 700 or whatever the hell it is, you know. And so it turns out she's, well, you never know. You could have a cataract. You got to get your eyes checked. I'm, all right. So I go to Lens Crafters, right? And I get the, you know, you got a couple of plans there. You know, you can get the just check it out. You can get the really check it out. Or you can get the, oh, my God, check it out, right? So I get the whole package and then looking in there with lights on. They're spraying stuff in there or whatever. So I finally get this prescription, right? So I'm looking at frames, and I don't really care, you know? So I got this young girl, very nice girl, you know? I said, you know, you got fashion sense? She goes, yeah. I said, all right, then pick something. I don't care what it is, right? So she, I said, but I need four pair of glasses, right? I need two, because I can't trust myself to bring them with me wherever I go, so I have to have one in the car all the time. And two pair of sunglasses, because I have two vehicles, right? So I keep them in. So it turns out, one of the sunglasses didn't take progressive frames, so I wind up with three of them. That's like $1,500 by the time I'm out of there. And I get them on, and I literally turned into Mr. Magoo. I can't see a damn thing. I don't know which end I'm supposed to be looking at. I'm tripping going downstairs, because when you look down, it's like the reading glasses, and I can't see the floor, you know what I mean? And I look up, and I could see, like, I could see India from here, you know? It's like crazy. And they say it's all about moving your head up and down, you know? But I feel like a bobblehead doll. I'm walking around like this all the time, trying to figure out where I'm going. It's like nuts. Stevie Wonder.
So do you find the need to have sunglasses?
I like them because I didn't realize it. She says you have the very, very faint beginnings of a cataract in one of your eyes, so she says you should wear them more often. And I used to wear them all the time, but I can't see out of them because they weren't prescription. So now I got them. Yeah, I like them because I'm out a lot. I'm out, you know, when I'm not at work, which is most of the time. But, you know, my days off and stuff, I spend golfing or at the beach or whatever, you know. So I like to have the shade there, yeah. But I can't play golf with glasses on. I don't know, it screws me up. You know, I can't look down or whatever. My friend says you get used to it, but I don't know.
Would you ever consider wearing contacts?
No, I can't put anything in my eye. I get a speck in my eye, I go crazy. You know, I can't voluntarily put something in there. My whole life I've been trying to keep stuff out of there. You know? So, no, thank you.
Well said.
What
well
has this
said.
Got to do with food?
I don't know, but...
So let's take a little commercial break, and we'll see if we can't come up with something over the commercial break to talk about.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing With Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM. Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, the restaurateur part. Let's talk about that. I got a couple of Easter things going on out in Amano and Allure, special Easter menus. If anybody's out on the north side by the vineyards or whatever visiting, you know, feel free to stop by. East is always a fairly busy day out there. You know, people come out in there. I don't see the people dressed up the way they used to. Easter used to be kind of a, you know, spring coming out. You know, they had Easter outfits and stuff for the kids or whatever. And I don't see so much of that anymore. There's a lot of traditions that are kind of going by the wayside, you know. Sad to see that go. It's always fun to see little kids.
Well, I'm hoping that weather-wise, that this weekend sort of turns the tide so that we really are in spring. As it turned out, I guess Wednesday afternoon was really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think today's supposed to be, today being Thursday.
Yeah.
But you're listening on Sunday. it's supposed to be nice. But I'm really looking forward to real spring weather. I know I woke up this morning and went outside, and I said, wow, I think we're there.
Yeah, I didn't wear a jacket today, so I'll probably regret that somewhere around 8 o'clock tonight, you know. But, yeah, it's a great time. For me, I love spring because it's the beginning of the cooking season. You know, winter, as you all know, there's not a lot of stuff growing on Long Island, for sure. I mean, we can get stuff, but it's not quite the same. I mean, I do a lot of braising. I do a lot of oysters. I do a lot of cauliflower and, you know, those root vegetable things, stuff like that. But now here it comes, you know. Now it's morels. It's asparagus. It's fiddlehead ferns. It's lamb. It's, you know, all these, you know, squashes and things that start to happen in spring. Rhubarb, strawberries are about a month away. And it just opens up a whole palette, you know, to play with, you know. So it's a lot of fun. I did buy some morels the other day, and I always tell people if they can try them. The morel's the greatest mushroom ever. It's a conical-shaped mushroom with a lot of holes in it. It's kind of odd-looking. It looks a little like Alice in Wonderland mushroom, you know. But they're ridiculously expensive now. So I'm waving people off. Anybody, if you want to buy a morel, now's not the time. I just paid $60 a pound for them.
Wow.
Which is, you know, I think heroin's cheaper than that, you know. But
isn't spring also when soft-shell crabs become
available? Yeah, crabs. They used to, you know, I never saw them until May, and then about 10 years ago, I started to get them in April. Now I've actually seen them. I had them on the menu at the end of March. They were real expensive now because there's not a lot of them around. I think I was paying like $70 a dozen, which is about double of what they normally are. But that, to me, is, you know, God's greatest gift to seafood. A soft-shell crab is as good as it gets. And I think the blue claw crab, you know, of all the crab out there, you know, you have Dungeness and you have king crab and, you know, stone crab claws and all that. The blue claw crab to me is the sweetest, bestest, you know, most funnest thing to eat, you know. A pain in the rear end for sure, you know, if you got a mallet and newspapers and, you know, you've eaten it that way, you'll realize that picking them is a process, and it's labor intensive, but you know the rewards are worth it, and it's kind of a fun way to eat once in a while. You know, you go down to the shore, you know, Maryland especially. You know, there's crab shacks all over the place, and they give you a mallet and spread out a bunch of newspapers and dump a bucket of crabs on your table, and you just go whacking away, you know, and picking out the meat. And it's there's two techniques. Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, dude. This is
no.
This is if culinary trivia was on Jeopardy. I'd take that guy out in a minute, you know, the guy that won all those Jeopardy shows, Ken something. But anyway, culinary trivia, there's really two types of people who eat crab. You have pickers and you have savers, right? So the pickers, they'll crack the crab, they'll pick and eat as they go. And the savers pick it and put it all in a cup, you know. And then when they're all done, they just, you know, then it's just all crab all the time, you know. And both ways are fun. I've done it both ways. But you should. I think everybody needs a pilgrimage to a crab shack, a real good crab shack, and, you know, where they steam them in a bucket and they dump them on your table and you just, you know, eat them like kind of raw, not raw, but in the raw, you know, kind of. It's like lobster. Lobster's the best lobster to me is when the juices are dripping down your elbow, you know, your wrist, and you got butter all over your nose, and, you know, it's just. That's the way it should be eaten.
Well, I tell this story when you talk about lobster. Carrie's a very lucky woman, not only because of me.
I was going to say, how could she get any
but
luckier?
When we get lobster, she's just not into the claws and the body or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I just rip out the tail and give it to her. So she's got the best.
Yeah, there you go.
And I have no objection because I find myself very amused with everything else.
You know, I got to do a dinner next week, and lobster's on it. It's a butter poach. It's out of the shell. And there's a lot to be said for that. There's no work involved. I mean, you just, you know, I like that too. But there's something, you know, like Allure, you know, my restaurant out east. You know, we're right on the bay. And I have an outside patio that seats about 150 people or whatever, you know. And what's better than, you know, kind of dusk, you know, sun going down, you're looking at the water and just a lobster in the rough, man, you know, with some steamers or, you know, corn on a cob. And you know, I remember taking my daughter out there when she was a little kid and we went to a restaurant and she had her first lobster. And it was just so much fun to watch her trying to work at it, you know. How do I do this, that? How do I do that, you know? It's kind of a fun family thing almost, you know. My grandkids now, we go to Allure, you know, they each have a lobster and they get it all over the place. It's on their clothes, down their shirt. It's hilarious, you know. And take them home, spray them down, you know. Like,
it's a wonderful thing.
It is. It's just, I don't think there's any, you know, what we were saying last week, it's like, you know, if more people would just share food, you'd probably have less wars, you know. And it's just something about it. There's a spirit of generosity there, you know. And I always liken it to try and take a, you know, you don't think food's cool? Try and take a dog's bone away, you know, and see what you get. You know, they don't share, you know. People are the only ones that share food. Everybody else is for themselves. You
That's
know?
Interesting. Yeah. Meanwhile, so when you talk about spring and summer produce, is turnips more fall?
Yeah, it's fall and winter, yeah. That's a root vegetable. And an underused one, you know. The only it's funny. You ever been to the Modern Snack Bar?
What was that?
The Modern Snack Bar?
That's where I get my turnips from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what made me think of it. And the Modern Snack Bar is the most, what's the word? Oddly named. It's like Joy Reid. You ever watch Joy Reid? Joy, there's no joy in Joy Reid. I mean, she's the most miserable person on TV. She's always got some kind of a problem. And it's the same thing with the Modern Snack Bar. I love the place, but there's nothing modern about it. It's hilarious, you know. But they sell turnips every fall, like right around Thanksgiving. I think he told me, the owner, John, he told me, I think he said they serve something like 2,000 or 3,000 pounds of turnips in like a week and a half out there. Because nobody else makes them. Who else makes them, you know? And they're, it's like, you know, mashed potatoes is ubiquitous, right? It's everywhere you see them. I mean, everybody makes them, everybody eats them, everybody serves them, you know? And the turnip is just a yellow potato, I mean, with more flavor. I mean, the potato has, the oddest part about mashed potatoes is it's the root vegetable with the least amount of flavor, and it gets the most amount of play. So explain that to me, you know? I made parsnips the other day.
Really?
They're so good, and they're so sweet, and they have such a great flavor. And I'll put them, you know, I'll use them like a mashed potato, and I'll put them under, you know, fish, because they're mild enough to go with fish. I'll use them under, you know, like chicken or lamb. And people, can hold the parsnips. I'll have the mashed potato. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. You know, there's very little flavor in mashed potatoes other than butter, you know, and salt. You know, eat a potato without butter and salt and tell me how good it was. So I think that, you know, turnips are another one. I mean, my grandmother used to make them all the time, and she would add a little sugar and a lot of butter, and they were just fabulous, you know, mashed up. But even if you can dice them, you know, you got to steam them first or boil them, whatever, because they're very hard. They're like beets. They take a long time. Or you can roast them. You can actually wrap them in aluminum foil and roast them for about an hour and 20 minutes.
Well, that's what I was Googling turnips. There were a lot of roasted turnip
options. Yeah, when you roast them, you know, as opposed to steaming or boiling, like if you boil potatoes, let's say. Potatoes are a bad example because there's not a lot of flavor there. But if you boil like turnips or if you boil parsnips, you leach a lot of the flavor out into the water. And so it becomes a little bit dumbed down. You know, when you roast it, you know, everything stays there. So it's a much purer and a much stronger flavor, I think, if you roast the thing. So that would be my advice. I would roast them, you know, wrap them up in aluminum foil and roast them, depending on the size. They do take a while, though. They're pretty pretty hard. I would say, you know, 350, 375 degree oven, the average turnip is probably the size of a softball. It would probably take you an hour and 20 minutes, maybe, you know, to soften it up. But once you get it there, you know, and you don't want it mashed softened, you know, you want it. The best way to check it is to take a skewer, and if it passes through there fairly easily, then you know you're done. But then you take them out, cool them, peel them. You can actually dice them up and saute them with a little butter. I use fresh thyme. You take a sprig or two of fresh thyme and just if you don't want the thyme leaves in there, what you can do, because thyme's a pain to peel, you know, and take the leaves off, what you can do is you take your butter and let your butter melt and foam up and put two or three sprigs of thyme in the butter and saute the diced turnips or, you know, parsnips, whatever you want to use, in that butter and finish it with a little salt and pepper. And then at the end, you just pull the big sprigs of thyme out, you know.
You just reminded me. I'm about to perform a science experiment.
Oh. You're not dissecting a frog or anything, are you?
No.
I'll take the legs.
I am going to be leaving my butter out during Passover.
Really?
So that I can spread it easily over my matzah.
You just better make sure there's no flies in the ointment, you know? That's the only problem.
Well, I'm going to put it in a glass butter tray.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah.
With a cover.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, cold butter on matzah is a recipe for a vacuum.
It is not easy.
No, it's not. You know what I made this year? Matzah crack.
I've heard about this.
Crack being like the addictive street drug, that's where it got the name from, because it's that addictive. And so what I did was I took matzah and I covered it with chocolate, but not just any chocolate. High density 72% Gionaja chocolate from Mexico. You know? And then I sprinkled in crushed hazelnuts, diced apricot.
So now you did mention this last week on the show. Hence might be the reason my mother made the comment the other night. She said, I think I'm going to make my chocolate-covered matzah. She goes, but should I add nuts? And I said, well, what do you usually do? She goes, I don't add nuts. I said, I think that's the way they would probably like it.
Yeah.
She goes, well, I got a lot of walnuts. I said, well, maybe the walnuts can stay in the refrigerator.
Well, you know, I did the same. I had the same conversation with my pastry chef. She's Spanish, right? So she goes, Jefe, you want me to put walnuts on there? I'm thinking, you know, I got all these nut allergy people out there. Maybe not. You know what? Make two. Make some with nuts, some without. So whatever. But I also put diced dried apricots and diced sun-dried cherries on there, and then I squiggled it back and forth with white chocolate, so it has that like Jackson Pollock kind of look to it.
Wait. So now explain this. So you have your matzah.
Right.
You've already put some chocolate on it.
Melted chocolate.
Yeah. Melted chocolate. Now, the fruit is diced?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, because I don't want to put whole pieces of dried apricot on there, right? So we diced the fruit up, and we sprinkled it all on it. So you get, and now you got a color palette going. You got the brownish from the nuts, the hazelnuts. You have the yellow, orangey thing from the dried apricot. You got the red from the cherries, right? So now I squiggle, melt down white chocolate. And I put it in a squeeze bottle, and I just, you know, shake it back and forth on there. So these lines, you know, zigzag all through that and both ways. And it looks like a splat kind of thing, you know. And there you have it. And it's as good as any dessert out there, you know.
Now, do you actually prepare the dried fruit yourself?
No, I buy that. Yeah, I get big cases of it because I use a lot of dried fruit. I use dried cherries for a lot of things, but the apricots primarily go on the cheese.
This isn't dehydrated. This is just dried.
Dried, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like a regular, you know, raisin.
So here's a crazy question.
Yes.
So it's been years, but where do you find that in a supermarket?
In a dry fruit section. Yeah, where you would find prunes or raisins.
It's
right over there, you know what I mean? They have them over there. Generally, you know, I don't know if I don't do supermarket stuff, so I've been in 10 supermarkets maybe in the last 40 years. But I do go occasionally to, a Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm bored, I'll go to Whole Foods and I'll just walk the vegetable aisle and just look, you know. And what always strikes me, and there's a commercial about this now. They say eat the colors, you know, because resveratrol and chlorophyll and all these, you know, greens and purples and blues have some sort of...
It sounds like from the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, kind of. But...
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my. But it's really, when you see all the vegetables laid out like that, you almost have this, like, religious experience about... Wow, I mean, all this stuff is here for a reason. And, you know, you eat blueberries because they have that resveratrol in them. And you eat greens because there's chlorophyll in it. All these things are healthy for you and providing different, you know, vitamins and minerals and stuff. And it's all there on display. It's like going to see a show, you know.
So here's an interesting concept. So yesterday was a very adventurous day for me. So last year for Passover, I stored away two boxes of egg matzah.
You did?
And I still have it.
Is it still good?
We're going to find out. But I was concerned. I said, Stu, you can't rest on your laurels of hoarding matzah from last year.
Can't rest on your matzah.
So I called Mom, who was getting ready for the holiday, and I said, Ma, I need some egg matzah. She goes, no one eats egg matzah. She goes, just your father, and he's not with us anymore. I said, Ma, that's my thing. So she went out yesterday, and she went to the store, and she goes, Stu, no egg matzah. I panicked. So I had been out on the road, and I jumped into the nearest Stop and Shop I could find. And I asked around, and, you know, where's the matzah kept? And on the end cap, well, there wasn't so much there or whatever. So then they said, oh, aisle four is the Jewish aisle. So they showed me matzah, but there was a hiccup. I usually eat Streit's egg matzah.
Streit's is the one, right?
This was Manischewitz.
Oh, I don't know.
So I said, hey, I'm getting nervous because what happens if I don't find the Streit's and then they sell out of the Manischewitz? So I bought a couple of boxes.
That's a panic buy.
And then I was out and about later, and I went to a ShopRite, which, I don't know, it seems to be a little more ethnic than Stop and Shop. And sure enough, there was Streit's, and then I struggled. Do I get two or three? I said, I better not be hoarding. Again, I still got two from last year. Now I got two Manischewitz and two Streit's. And I'm looking forward to, you know,
with a little matzah tasting.
Yeah, with you know, my melted, my room temperature butter.
That and a glass of Mogan David Red, and you're ready to go, right?
Are you a mind reader?
Yeah.
So then I'm on my way home last night. I got my matzah.
Right.
Then I had to go get the wine. So I go into the store, and again, my dad. He was a man of tradition, and he couldn't have the normal Manischewitz Concord grape. No, it had to be the extra heavy Malaga. So
if you're going to drink bad wine, you might as well drink the best bad wine.
So over the years, as it's turned out, I haven't been able to get the Manischewitz version. But there's another one. The name escapes me right at the moment, but I'll look it up. But so I got the Malaga and that brand. But I went last night looking, and they only had the Concord grapes. So I still have to get the Malaga, otherwise, because we have to make what we call Horosis.
Yeah, Horosis.
Horosis
yeah, sure.
Is the chopped apple with
apple
the chopped
with
nuts.
The wine and nuts. Yeah.
So. We'll,
that represents the cement.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's funny, you know, the first time I ever went to a Seder was my friend Eddie. He actually rented out Mill River Inn, which was a restaurant in Oyster Bay at the time, and he did all the cooking himself, and he's actually a very good cook. But he he forewent the bad wine tradition, and he has a huge wine cellar. So we were drinking Kistler Chardonnays, we were drinking white Burgundies. It was
that's
crazy.
Ridiculous. You should be drinking Kedem. I just found the other brand.
Yeah. No. It's so anyway. I, at the time, I was dating this Jewish woman who was she was down in Florida visiting her parents for Passover, and I call her up. You know, I said, "How's your mother and father do?" "Oh, good. Everything's good." And said, "What did you do tonight?" I said, "I went to a Seder." She goes, "You kidding me?" You goyim. She's kidding me, right? So I said, no, Eddie had a Seder over at Mill River Inn. She goes, what? I said, yeah, a Seder at Mill River Inn. She goes, well, what did he serve? So I started going through the menu, you know, and she goes, you sound like you're slurring a little bit. I said, well, we had some wine, you know. I was telling her about the wine. She goes, I can't believe it. I've been doing 35 lousy Seders my whole life. You, the first one you're drinking, Bordeaux, you know. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it's pretty funny because...
It's a night like no other.
So I asked my mother, do I need the Passover wine? She goes, no, we got the ceremonial stuff.
Oh, boy.
I still
got to
get more.
Yeah.
But she goes, we need something to drink.
Yeah, amen. Hey, good for Mom. I can't take it anymore, you know? I've had enough of that stuff. It is funny, though. You know, I had a friend of mine who was representing an Israeli wine company, and they actually made pretty good... The Cabernet was pretty good. Some of the wines were horrific, but the Cabernet was good. So, and I'm trying to think of the name of it, but I was the largest distributor of, I bought a case of Israeli wine on the Eastern Seaboard. I think I was the only one that ever bought a case of this stuff. I thought it was pretty good. It was hard. It was a hard sell. I probably drank the whole thing myself. I would think, you know, it's fabulous.
So I was watching TV the other night. First of all, one of my favorite shows, and I'm still trying to watch all of the old episodes, is Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Uh-huh.
And it was so appropriate, this one line that was told by one of the characters. He was a restaurateur, and he says he got his start. It all started when he had his glass of Manischewitz wine and gefilte fish at his grandmother's.
Oh, my God.
But the question that comes to mind is somebody in one of the shows I was watching said, I need a glass of Pinot. And they serve them a glass of red wine, which
right.
would be Pinot Noir, right?
Sure, yeah.
But I was trying to figure out which is more popular, Pinot Grigio or Pinot Noir?
Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, so somebody said Pinot, I assumed that it was going to be a glass of white wine that was served, but obviously it was
Noir. See, I would go the other way, because if, you know, being a wino, if somebody says, I'll have a Pinot, I would ask to clarify it, but I would automatically think they were talking about red. But, you know, you're right. I mean, you know, it could be Pinot Grigio, it could be Pinot Gris, you know, it could be Pinot Meunier. I mean, there's like four or five Pinots out there, you know, so... It pays to clarify.
So it's still early in the day for Easter, and I guess there might be some liquor stores open. I guess wine and liquor stores can't open until noon on Sunday. Is that correct?
I don't know if I think it's still a law here. I'm not sure. You know.
So my question to you, and again for the Jewish population and those that will be observing Easter. What might be a suggested nice wine for the holiday table?
Well, I think that, you know, we were talking about a Seder before. You were talking about turkey. Turkey and brisket. Okay, so there you got two. I'd like an aromatic white with the turkey. So I would go with Riesling, dry Riesling. You could go Chardonnay with turkey. I don't think it's a great match, but it's fine. But I think a Riesling would be good. If you really want to be adventurous, there's two grapes out there, and you may have a hard time finding them unless you go to a really intense wine store like the one downstairs there. What's his name?
Stu Leonard.
Stu Leonard. You can, or Total Wine over in Westbury where they have a pretty big inventory. But there's a grape called Sylvaner, S-Y-L-V-A-N-E-R, Sylvaner, which I love. I mean, I drink a lot of it, and it's kind of like Riesling, but not, and kind of like Chardonnay, but not. You know, it's just in the middle somewhere.
So now I'm tossed because we had our friend Massimo from Insieme Wines here recently,
yeah,
and I'm led to believe they have a very nice Riesling.
I hear that, yeah.
But I don't know if I want to do that or the Sylvaner.
Well, the Sylvaner is certainly less popular, but it's one of those best-kept secret things, you know. The other one, a white with turkey, would be Mueller Turgau, and that's spelled M-U-L-L-E-R, or M-E-U-L-L-E-R, and Turgau is T-H-U-R-G-A-O, or G-A-U, G-A-U. So it's another grape from, you know, generally from northern Italy. It's made in Germany also, but... another one, just a fun wine, has a, you know, big fruit kind of flavor to it that I think would go really well with turkey. So if you
and that's
if
a white.
That's a white. If you're feeling really adventurous, those are the ways I would go. Now, as far as reds go, I would tend to think a lighter red, because if you're going to have turkey and brisket, you know, kind of you can straddle that thing, you know, with a Pinot Noir, a Burgundy. You can straddle that with a Garnacha from Spain, which is a really fun grape. I think it's one of Spain's gifts to the world, tell you the truth. But, yeah, the Garnachas are really, really nice. And then, you know, as much as nobody drinks it anymore, Merlot. Merlot's a nice grape. You know, most people don't realize that 90% of Bordeaux is Merlot, you know. I can't give a California Merlot away in a restaurant. I mean, just people don't drink them anymore. And it was probably the Sideways effect, you know, that movie that was, right, I will not right, drink right. Merlot, you know. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's a noble grape, you know.
Well, it's interesting. I've also been drinking a lot of rosé, which in previous seasons you've talked highly of.
Yes.
But I don't want to fall into a rut. And I don't think we need three bottles of wine at the table.
I disagree. I think red, white, and pink is the way to go.
Might have to do that then.
Yeah, right. Well, let's take a break and we'll think about that. And we'll come back and we'll argue more about wine.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Can I just talk about the author part for a second?
Sure.
So my second book is at the publisher, right? And it's been there a while. I sent it in for final editing on February 1st. And they said it'll be 6 to 8 weeks. So at the 8-week period, I call them up and I go, what's going on with the book? Well, if you don't hear from us by May 13th, you know, give us another call back. I'm like, well, what's the problem? They said, well, it's the coronavirus, the pandemic has put us a little behind. I'm like, isn't editing done on a computer? You know, you don't have to go to the office for that. I mean, you can do it from home. I mean, I could have had it done a month and a half or 2 months ago if they just told me they were backed up. So anyway, my long and short of this is I'm hoping to have the new book out by July. So if anybody's interested in reading about the shenanigans that go on in restaurants, it's called Second Helping, and it should be out by July. And it'll be available on Amazon and other outlets at the restaurants and, you know, some of the vineyards and stuff are holding it. So I'm kind of excited about it because I think it's better than the first one. And the first one had a pretty good run. We sold like over 8,000 copies of that, which I understand from literary people that's pretty good for a self-published book. But I'm lucky enough to have outlets. You know, I have the radio show. I have the restaurants. I have, you know, whatever. So, but thank you to all of you who supported the first book, and hopefully you'll do the same. I think you'll enjoy it.
Well, I think we'll have to do a launch party for you.
I think so, too, yeah.
But you have to give some thought to where we would do that.
I have some ideas. Yeah, I have some ideas. We can figure that out. Yeah. I have some friends that would host that, for sure, you know. It's a fun process. You know, writing is I like it. It's an enjoyable process for me because, you know, what I do normally is, like, high-energy, high-stress kind of, I need two more of those. Give me 5 days. What happened to the thing? Where's the salmon on? You know, Most people, and the dichotomy between that and the serenity of a dining room is hilarious to me, because you have all these people out there with tinkling glasses and silverware and hushed sounds and tablecloths and carpeting and all that. And inside the kitchen is a war zone, you know. It's people running in and out, you know, panicked.
So give us a painting of behind the scenes. Do you sit at a computer and write your thoughts?
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, sometimes I'll jot down things, you know, because, you know, my memory isn't what it used to be, you know, and I'll get to it later. But for the most part, it's a really kind of Zen completative activity, you know. I put on, you know, sometimes I'll put on some music really low. I'll put on a Steve Vai thing. It's just instrumental where I don't have to worry about listening to words or getting distracted. But, yeah, it's just me in the office, in my home office, just, you know, typing, and it's quiet, and it's just completely different than what I do normally, you know.
An open glass, open bottle of wine?
I generally don't do that when I'm writing, because then I get, you know, I start more whining than writing, you know what I mean? You know, somebody, I have a friend who's a very highly thought of author, and he told me that he goes, writing's a discipline. He goes, you know, you can't wait for the muse to show up. You have to be at the computer all the time, because she visits when she feels like it, not when, you know, you want it to. So you can't go, well, I'll write as soon as I get an idea. You have to just do it every day. You got to sit down there, start writing, and it comes. And it's true. I've done it myself, where I sat there and I'm beginning a story or whatever, and I can't really figure it out. And I'm like, you know, because I'm trying to make it entertaining at the same time. I'm not just reporting what happened, you know. And then all of a sudden, an idea happens, and it starts to flow, and then it flows into another thing, and then you get going, you know? And it's so true. He says, you know, you can't. He says, I write every day. I have to sit down. I have to write every day. He says, and it's not all brilliant, believe me, you know? He says, but, you know, you have to do it. So I took his advice, and it worked for me, you know? I would like to try and write a novel, but that's a whole different, you know, set of problems, because you have to, A, have talent, you know? B, have an imagination, and C, be able to articulate it, you know, and organize it. You know, I can tell a story from what I've seen, because I saw it happen. So I know who the characters are, and I know what the plot line was, and I know how it ended, you know. But to create that out of nothing, I mean, that's super talent. I just read this book by this woman, Sandra Brown. You've probably seen her name, right? I mean, she's on every paperback book in the airport or whatever, and I'm looking for something to read when I was going down to Florida, and I picked up a Sandra Brown thing because I've seen her name so much, and turns out, I mean, it's pretty good, you know. And you know, you have these mysteries, and they have this, all these twists and turns that people just come up with out of nothing. It's I'm amazed by it. I'm amazed how they do it. So anyway, I'd like to take a shot at it, but I'm gonna have to wait until I'm out of the restaurant business completely, because it's gonna take a lot of time and effort. And I don't have it at the moment. So we'll see what happens.
I'm sitting here sulking.
Why?
Because I just texted somebody out east to bring me some turnips from Modern Snack Bar.
Oh, yeah, they don't have
them. But they will open for their 72nd year on Wednesday, May 18th. Hmm.
Well, I'm glad it's that, because you can cure that. I figured maybe they'll add an egg matzo or something, you know, over there in a depressed state. I'm almost scared to ask this, but what is the difference between egg matzah and the other? Is one lighter or something?
It has a little more oomph. It's got a little more. I mean, matzah is pretty plain. This has a little bit of a. It's like an egg bagel.
It's,
you know,
flavor to it.
Yeah,
I never found egg bagels tasted all that different. I think the texture's a little different, but I don't know. What do I know? Goyim. You know?
If you were a woman, I think they'd call you a shiksa.
I would be a shiksa if I was a woman. Thank God I'm not a shiksa, you know? Anyway, I think it's that time, you know? We have to say goodbye for another week. We're going to clear off with Tom's three keys to life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life is as important as sex and pizza. And everybody, happy Passover, happy Easter. Enjoy your day, enjoy your family, and we'll catch you next week.
Happy holidays.
Amano Asteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Asteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Asteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouthwatering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts. Arts.